Blog Talk Radio.
Talladega, Alabama, you're in the pit stop with Tim the Span and Stephen Wilson on the Speedway Digest Radio Network, home of the 2.66 mile, 33 degree bank monster we call Talladega Super Speedway. Got a real good show scheduled tonight, ladies and gentlemen. Just want to give a big shout out at this time to Talladega Super Speedway and Mr. Grant Lynch and his staff there. Like Grant always says, this is more than a race, this is Talladega. Big shout out to Talladega Short Track. And I want to send some prayers out to Preacher. He's a part owner in Talladega Short Track. He recently had a heart attack a few days ago and had to go through a quadruple bypass. Prayers are going out to them and Miss Rita Donahue out there. And we've got a real good show scheduled. We've got Mr. Dylan Martin, a racer out of Lakeland, Florida. Drives in the Joey Coulter Pro Truck Series. They say he's really burning it up down that way. And that's at 7:15 Eastern Time. And at 7:30 Eastern Time, we have Mr. Jimmy Small, president of Iowa Speedway, will be joining us. And I want to give a big shout out to, I talked to him yesterday. I've been talking to him for a few days. And he told me just to call him Reverend Joe. And I said, Reverend, I would rather just call you that because I do not want to butcher your name. But at this time, I want to bring my sidekick and good friend, Mr. Stephen Wilson, CEO of Speedway Digest, in and get a few thoughts from him. Stephen, how y'all doing tonight, bud, up Martinsville?
We're doing all right, dealing with 100-degree heat like everybody else is.
I know it. And, you know, we was hollering about all the rain we was getting, and now we wish we'd get some.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, and Stephen, you know, I've talked to you, you know, the past couple of days. We've got a Reverend, Mr. Reverend Joe. I'm not going to say his last name because I'll butcher it up like I do everybody else's. But at this time, Stephen, I'm gonna bring Reverend Joe on and let him do the invocation, and then we'll go through the national anthem and the flyover, and then we'll let Reverend Joe talk a little bit about what he's done, what he's got going on, and then. Myself and you, I'll go through the post-race stuff from Daytona International Speedway from the 13th Annual Subway Firecracker 250, and then you got the cup side. So I want to bring Mr. Reverend Joe on tonight. Reverend Joe, you're in the pit stop. Tim Despain and Stephen Wilson on Speedway Digest Radio Network. How you doing tonight, my friend?
I'm doing great, and thank you for having me on. I appreciate being with you. Let me start
us
off with a prayer for the evening. Lord, we come before you in the precious name of Jesus Christ, our Lord and Savior. We ask you not only to bless this show tonight, bless all the people that Tim just mentioned are hurting and all those others that are hurting all over the world. We thank you for our soldiers that are working so hard to keep us free. We ask your blessings on their families. We ask you to be with all of our racers and all of our race fans all over the country that will be racing this week and at the various different local and national tracks. And we ask you to be with all of them and all of those involved at those tracks, including the fans. Keep them safe and be with us all. In the name of Jesus Christ, amen.
Amen. And Reverend Joe, this is mine and Suzanne's real good friend, Donna Elkins from Talladega Super Speedway. She's actually done the national anthem out there. And this is a recording of the national anthem that she did at Talladega Super Speedway.
Through the heavens, the sky.
Great invocation, Reverend Joe. Thank you very much. And, you know, if you would like to meet my sidekick, Mr. Stephen Wilson, Stephen, you've got Reverend Joe in the hot seat.
How you doing, Steve?
Hey, Joe. How you doing tonight?
I'm doing all right. How you guys doing?
We're just trying to stay out of the heat like everybody else is. I think Tim said something about you're in California.
Yeah, it's about my house about 100 degrees today, but we don't have the humidity, but hot's hot, you know. That's how it is. So,
yeah, it's the humidity that always gets you.
Yep, it heat is heat. And so you're in Martinsville, huh?
Yeah, I'm right in Virginia, right? I got to deal with all the mugginess and everything around here. So about 95, 97 degrees a day, 103, 104, I think, with the humidity out here.
Yeah, that's why I moved to the West Coast, because we get hot during the day, but it gets down to 60s at night, which is sweet. So.
Yeah, that makes for it night being nice. Well, thank you for coming on. I appreciate you coming on tonight.
I'm honored to do it and look forward to being with you every week and at least open the show for you and get to know you guys a bit better. So God bless you. God be with you guys and have a wonderful show this evening.
Okay. Thank you very much, Reverend Joe. And Reverend, if you want to throw your website out and, you know, what you do and everything, we've got maybe a couple of minutes and then me and Stephen will do our post-race stuff from Daytona International. You got the floor, my friend, if you want to take a couple of minutes to talk about what you do. Okay.
Yeah, let me just give it to you in a couple of minutes as brief as I possibly can. Our website is ontrackwithjesus.org, and you can find out about us there and send us questions and be glad to talk with everybody about whatever they'd like to talk about. I've been racing for almost 50 years. Started in the Northeast in the Modifieds. I've run a Modified at Martinsville and been all up and down the East Coast. Been out here in California, I believe, 27 years. I race local track mostly. I've raced about everything there is to race. I'm out at the racetrack almost every week at one of the local tracks doing their opening invocation. There's a few tracks that I get to race my little hot rod at. I've been in oval track racing forever. And these days I run around a little four-cylinder Pinto, but at several different speedways, Orange Show Speedway and San Bernardino being more or less my home track. And the other pet project we have that we love the most is we take a race car and sometimes we get a couple of guys together and do it. And we go out to the schools and talk to children about setting goals in life and staying off drugs and away from other such liquids and things that can get them in trouble. And if you want to drive a race car someday, can't do it if you're high on drugs or anything else that affects your body. So that's one of our favorite projects, and the schools invite us out, and we're one of the few organizations that does it for free. And unfortunately, last year it's been a little tight on the budget, not being able to get as much done as we'd like, but we're getting back on our feet and getting back at it. And that's what we do.
Okay. Thank you very much, Reverend. And then again, we want to welcome you being a part of our big team with Speedway Digest Radio Network. And, you know, it's not only just our show. Stephen has two more shows. And, you know, like I said last night when me and you talked, we just do it for fun and just to help the sport out.
Well, I'm honored to be with you guys, and I'll be talking to you again next week.
Thank you very much, Reverend Joe. We'll talk at you next week, bud.
All righty. God bless, guys. Have a great evening.
God bless you, too.
Big round of applause there. I mean, Reverend Joe, I'm not going to mention his last name.
But he done real good, Stephen, because I've been reading the Lord's Prayer now for, what, 6-8 weeks? We finally got somebody that can do a good one.
Yeah, he is. So.
Yeah. Okay. And we've got our good friend Todd Bigsby waiting. But I want to go ahead. Me and you talked earlier. You was going to let me do the post race stuff for the NASCAR Nationwide Series, and we'll let you go through the Cup side from Daytona from this past weekend. Daytona International Speedway 13th Annual Subway Firecracker 250. The race winner was Casey Kane, age 34. Team number 5, Hillman Chevrolet. Owner Rick Hendrick, crew chief Ernie Cope. Casey Kane won the 13th Annual Subway Firecracker 250, his 8th victory in 204 NASCAR Nationwide Series races. This is his first victory and first top 10 finish in 2014. This is his first victory and 9th top 10 finish in 19 races at Daytona International Speedway. Reagan Smith finished 2nd, posted his 3rd top 10 finish in 10 races at Daytona International Speedway. It is his 14th top 10 finish in 2014. Ryan Sieg. Ryan had a real good run. Ryan Sieg finished 3rd. Best career finish, posted his 2nd top 10 finish in 2 races at Daytona International Speedway. Ryan Sieg, 3rd, was the highest finishing rookie. Reagan Smith leads the point standings by 12 points over Elliott Sadler. The margin of victory for the race there at Daytona was 0.021 seconds. It's the 3rd closest NASCAR Nationwide Series finish at Daytona and 8th all-time in series history. And I'm not going to read off the infraction sheet. Stephen, I'll let you go ahead and take care of the cup because we're going to have Mr. Dylan Martin coming on here shortly.
Well, we had a little bit of a rain out on Saturday night, so we got running a little late on Sunday morning, about 11 o'clock in the morning. Had a pretty decent front row out there, some guys that never run up front. Don't hear a whole lot out of them. David Gilliland and Reed Sorensen took the front row pole and outside pole to start the race off. We only got in 110 of the 160 scheduled laps for the day due to multiple rain showers that came over Daytona International Speedway. A little after 3 o'clock, NASCAR called the race. Eric Almirola visited Victor Lane for his first Sprint Cup Series victory, and it was 30 years to the weekend that Richard Petty brought the famed number 43 into the Daytona Victory Lane for the Firecracker 400 for his 200th NASCAR Sprint Cup Series victory. So it had been 30 years since it had visited Victory Lane there. It's also the first time that the number 43 has been in Victory Lane since Andretti did it in, I believe it was 2001 at Martinsville Speedway. Just a couple little things. Austin Dillon, he was highest finishing rookie of the race, and Jeff Gordon left there with 27 points in lead over Dale Earnhardt Jr. in 2nd. One thing that was announced today due to post-race inspection, the number 41 of Kurt Busch, his team has been penalized $10,000, crew chief Daniel Canost. In addition, Kurt Busch, has lost 10 championship driver points, and car owner Gene Haas has lost 10 championship owner points. The violation that NASCAR tagged them for is something that they only use at Daytona and at Talladega on the super speedways, plate racing. I've never seen this one before, so I'm going to try and read it off as best as possible. 20-12i, for events at Daytona International Speedway and Talladega Super Speedway at all times, the delta or difference of the Z-height measurement between the center of the panhandle bar mounted bolt located in the left truck trailing arm and the center of the panhandle bar mounted bolt located in the right rear subframe mounting bracket must not exceed 3 inches per the 2014 NASCAR rulebook.
Okay, now, and Stephen, was that the new no ride height rule that you were talking about?
This doesn't look like it has anything to do with the ride height rule. It looks like it looks like a measurement between the front and rear trailing arms, truck arms of the car. I am not familiar enough with this. I believe this is something that has been instituted this year in 2014 for the new car, and first, I know that this rule has actually been applied to anybody before. I have not had time to actually get a clarification of what exactly that means, other than, it's just the measurements, of the subframes and the truck arms on the front and rear of the car. I guess it's got to do, like I said, with the construction of the new car and the templates that they are using each weekend to measure the car's multiple ride heights and multiple points on the car that he used in the laser system.
Yeah, that's 10-4-2. And I hate to ask you, but I want to ask you on air. What was that section and stuff where I can look it up in the rule book? I've been busy all day. I ain't had time to hear nothing from NASCAR media. Have you got that page and section?
Yeah, it's 20-12I is the actual rule in the 2014 NASCAR Sprint Cup rule book that they tagged them on.
Okay, 10-4. Thank you, bud. I'll search it out, or either I'll get Suzanne to look at it, because I finally got me some more reading glasses. I don't know if I left my reading glasses in Orlando when I was down there for my conference, you know, when you done my show, but Suzanne finally got me some reading glasses. That's probably why I'm talking better, because I can read better. But anyway, Stephen, we've got Dylan Martin, young kid I was telling you about out of Lakeland, Florida. He's agreed to come on. He races at Joey Coulter Pro Truck Series something down there, and they say he's really burning up. He's really caught a lot of eyes. So at this time, I want to bring Dylan Martin on the pit stop with Tim Spanish, Stephen Wilson.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Hey, Dylan, how you doing tonight, my friend? It's Tim.
Good, how are you?
Good, good. They say you're really burning it up down there, bud. How's everything going?
Pretty good. We're getting there, so.
Good. Me and Kim, we've been emailing back and forth, you know, you're a PR lady, and I really hadn't had time to look at much because I've been so busy here in the last few days, half a week, whatever. But if you want to talk about what you actually do for some of the fans that really don't know about this Joey Coulter Series thing, you got the floor, Dylan. Go ahead, bud.
It's a series ran by Joey Coulter and Rip Bristol. We got it together for last year because the series shut down that we were running. So right now we're sitting sixth in points, I think. We missed the first race, so we're having to run the dirt race that they're running this week. And actually, we would have used that one for our drop race, but since we already missed one, we had to use that one for our drop race. So we're sitting sixth in points right now. We did a few late model stuff. It hasn't worked out yet. So we're going to hold on, excuse me for a second. Sorry, my alarm clock was going off like crazy. we're going to try and finish this year out. We're going to try and finish this year out and hopefully try and get a championship this year. We tried to do it last year. We came up short by, I think, one race because we knocked the radiator out. So hopefully we can not have that happen this year and get a championship.
Sounds good. And I'm going to hand you over to my good friend Stephen Wilson, CEO of Speedway Digest. Stephen, if you have any questions for Dylan, we've got Mr. Jimmy Small popped in too, so we might have a big round table here in a minute. But, Stephen, you got the floor, bud.
Yeah, hey, Dylan. For those of you that don't know much about you, can you talk a little bit about how you got interested in the racing and who some of your role models were growing up in the sport?
I started out in motocross. I ran motocross for probably a little over a year, and then I got hurt real bad, and my parents don't let me do it anymore. So I eventually just got in go-karts after that. And I think I raced go-karts for probably 3 years. I raced it nationally in the USAC series. And then I eventually just moved up into running trucks. I ran the rookie trucks for a little bit, and then my first race that I ran the pro trucks in was actually the charity race that Joey Coulter and Rick Bristol puts on for the Cars Racing for a Cause. So I've pretty much just been racing trucks for probably like about 3 or 4 years now.
I'm looking forward to the future about what you have going on. Where do you see yourself, and where would you like to move up in? And how is working with Joey Coulter allowing you to fulfill some of those dreams and getting more acclimated to the stock cars?
Yeah, I ran a late model race. That's what we're trying to get in late models right now. I did one race. I was running up and forth, but unfortunately, we got wrecked. So ever since then, I haven't really gotten to run late model much. We're trying to get some stuff together right now for it. So, but my biggest goal right now is wanting to just run NASCAR because that's the pinnacle of everything.
All right. Well, I'm sorry I don't know that much about you, and, you know, I appreciate you coming on tonight, and, you know, best of luck to you in, you know, trying to get through NASCAR, and, you know, what you got. I think you're down in Florida now, running out there, so good luck down there racing around the tracks in Florida.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it.
Okay, sorry. I was muted. My button muted. Anyway, thanks for coming on. But I want to bring Todd Bigsby on. He was a big part of getting with your PR lady, Miss Kim, and getting you on the show. And I want to let Todd have a few minutes if that's okay with you. He's from upstate New York. His home track is Watkins Glen, and we've got Mr. Jimmy Small, president of Iowa Speedway. I just talked to him in the screening room. He said, y'all go ahead and do what you got to do. Just, you know, he said, you got me for whenever. And I said, thanks. So I want to bring Todd on at this time. And
let's get ready to rumble!
There you go, Mr. Todd Bigby. How you doing tonight, my friend?
I'm doing good.
Good, good. You're in the pit stop with Tim Despain and Stephen Wilson and Dylan Martin. I wanted to bring you on, let you ask Dylan some questions or whatever y'all want to talk about, and then we'll let Dylan talk about his next few races and everything, and then we'll bring Mr. Jimmy Small, president of Iowa Speedway, on.
Well, as people are starting to know now, Dylan also does the tabs for Kids with Cancer. And I'm collecting like crazy and trying to get as many as I possibly can to try to help that out. So by you doing that, kind of has touched my heart. So that kind of got me into it. But I've been a fan of Dylan's for some time now. Matter of fact, I was wearing his signed shirt. I have his signed hero card and wristband. How many more races do you have for this year?
I think we have about nine right now. I don't have an exact schedule right now, but I think it's about nine.
Okay. And, you know, Kim, you know, I try promoting your name and trying to get it out there because you do so well, and I follow just about everything that you do when it goes onto your page. I look every day to see what different stuff there is, and, you know, I know, you know, you guys work really hard besides your schooling, you know, you do your racing. Since you've been doing your racing, has that affected your school schedule at all?
Actually, it's affected a lot. I don't go to public school anymore, so... right now I'm working from 9 to 1. I'm doing school from 1 to 5. So it's pretty much a full-time thing right now. And so I do school online, so I get to pretty much wherever I want. If I have to go do something with the kids or I have to go racing, go practice or something like that, I can just get up and leave whenever I want.
And I mean, I've been waiting for this day to come so I can actually get a chance to talk to you. Even though, you know, I talk to Kim and everybody else and keep up with you, and I think it's amazing on everything that you do. I mean, you're a young man. I'm 42, had 4 back surgeries, so it's my dream now just to watch you young stars work your way up, and then when you become into the Sprint Cup trucks and all that, I'm right there with you, following you.
I think I appreciate it.
Great. That sounds good, Todd. And Todd, thank you for helping us get Dylan in. Dylan, if you want to, you got the floor here for a little while before we bring Mr. Jimmy Small on. If you want to talk about where your upcoming races are, like I mentioned earlier, and some of your sponsors you want to give a shout-out to, you go ahead, my friend.
Yeah, our next race is actually a dirt race up in Lake City in North Florida. That's the first time racing the truck on dirt. I think it's the first time the trucks have been on dirt. So that should be pretty exciting. I'm really excited. Like, I'm excited for it. I haven't been this excited for a race in a while. But I got to thank all my sponsors, Blackwater Integration, Fellows Trucking Curing Cancer Charity Challenge. That is a very long name. Visual Images, Performance Distributors, Buffalo Wild Wings, Martin's Place Salon, Sino Engineering, Big Star Studios, just everybody who helps me out. I can't thank them enough.
Great. Sounds great, Dylan. And I want to thank you again for taking time out of your busy schedule. Thank Miss Kim for everything that she does for you. And good luck, my friend, and don't be a stranger. Just whenever you want to come back on, just tell Kim to shoot us a text or whatever. We'll get you back on, bud.
All right. Thank you. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Yes, sir. You're welcome. Be safe, bud. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that was Mr. Dylan Martin out of Lakeland, Florida. And, Todd, I'm going to leave you in here with myself and Steve. We're going to bring Mr. Jimmy Small, president of Iowa Speedway. We're going to bring him on at this time.
Let's get ready to rumble!
There you go, Jimmy. We always have to bring everybody in with a boom.
Yeah, I like that. It's a heck of an entrance. I don't know if I can live up to that amount of energy, though. I'll do my best.
Thank you. And I want to thank you, too, Mr. Small, for taking the time to call in. And I'm going to let Stephen Wilson, CEO of Speedway Digest, I'm going to let y'all talk because he was a big part of getting you on the show. And you're in here with myself and Todd Bigsby and Stephen. Stephen, you got the floor, bud.
Hey, Jimmy, how are you doing tonight?
Very well, thank you.
Well, you know, the first question I think a lot of people don't realize about you is how young you are. I think when the press release went out that you were going to be the president of Iowa Speedway, you were 28 at the time. So tell us a little bit about how that has affected you being so young and taking over a major facility like Iowa Speedway, knowing that other track presidents out there have a lot more age and a lot more experience on you.
Sure. I think the first effect is I still get carded when I go to pick up a case of Miller Lite here, even locally. So that's something I'm still up against at my age, unfortunately. But it's been an incredible experience so far, having started late last fall, right around the October time frame when this opportunity arose with NASCAR. And, I got a call from Brian France. A little bit out of the blue, it came right after our first race of the Chase last year, Monday afternoon. He gave me a shout and brought this opportunity up. Caught me a little off guard, like I said, and I couldn't really – it's still tough to really describe my excitement level. I mean, having started in the sport just about 6 years ago, have loved every minute of time I've spent, whether it be in the office or on the road, 28, 30 weekends a year working at every racetrack and working with all our race teams. And for me to have an opportunity this early in my career to get involved at this level, at the promoter level, and really get my hands along with leading a fantastic team here at Iowa Speedway. It's really an honor. It truly is, and I mean that when I say it. And you're right. I am up against a lot of veterans across our sport, but at the same time, they've been very, very helpful with reaching out, providing me with some guidance, answering any questions I may have. And then I've also had the benefit of spending the last 6 years going to a lot of these racetracks and seeing them when they put on the biggest events, of their season each year and have seen the best practices, whether that be what we see out in the concourse, what we see from ingress and egress, fans getting to and from the racetrack, camping, all the different events that take place, whether that be practice or qualifying, pre-race to victory lane, all of those different parts of the race weekend I've seen for the last 6 years at racetracks across the country, and have definitely utilized those experiences, that knowledge, along with all the resources that NASCAR provides to really put on what we believe to be tremendous events here at Iowa Speedway. So it's definitely been a group effort, and it will continue to be. Wouldn't have lasted a day out here without such a wonderful staff and such great support by NASCAR and everyone within our industry.
And Iowa Speedway is in a little bit of a different boat than some of the other tracks. Since the 1950s, ISC has bought, built, and promoted tracks across the United States as a subsidiary of NASCAR themselves. But NASCAR came in and actually bought Iowa Speedway from the group that was previously the owners out there. How much is it a difference that you are working directly for NASCAR as a track promoter and not working with ISC?
Well, first-hand experience, I don't have any as far as working as a one of ISC's family of racetracks, but I will say that working directly with NASCAR and having come from the industry services department, which is where I spent the last 6 years at NASCAR, has been very, very beneficial, not just to me, but to everyone here at the Speedway. I mean, we are completely in tune with all the different resources that NASCAR provides, whether that be, best practices, case studies, different types of research, from a fan perspective. We, as NASCAR, as an industry, we're constantly talking to our fans, asking them how the racing was, how their time was at the event itself, and being able to know who to talk to, when to reach out to them, know what kind of data we're working with and really know how fans respond to different types of events and experiences has been really beneficial. But I wouldn't say that's any different than any other racetrack on our circuit. I think Industry Services Group, which is, again, the group I came from, has a couple of groups dedicated to working with each track, each team, and we've been doing that for north of 6 years now. So I would argue that the rest of the industry is as in tune with NASCAR and the resources they provide as we are here at Iowa Speedway, and pretty proud of that, too, because again, that's where I come from, and I'm really proud of what we've accomplished so far in just a short amount of time.
And Iowa Speedway, they have a very full plate as far as racing is scheduled there from IndyCar and Nationwide trucks out there. You put a lot of events out there throughout the year. What is the next step, especially with a lot of talk of the changing in the schedules? What do you feel is the next step for Iowa Speedway?
The next step for us is focusing on creating experiences, atmospheres, events out here at the Speedway that may or may not involve racing. I mean, we pride ourselves in being the major sports complex or sports property in the state of Iowa. So, having this facility, having this full-time staff that's so good at putting on events, provides us a really good opportunity to bring in all different types of events. So motorsports included, we're looking at any different number of pieces of entertainment that could come in here and really contribute to the quality of life here for everyone in the city of Newton, everyone in Des Moines area, central Iowa, and then the state of Iowa. Those are really what we're focusing on right now outside of the next two big event weekends we've got, especially the one this coming weekend. But I think that's probably the next step is what we'll do this fall in terms of business planning and preparing our schedule for 2015 and, learning more and really applying everything we know, everything we've learned, best practices here, and what we've seen across the state as far as other events that have been successful and generating more events here to be the buzz of the town year-round, not just for three big events throughout the season and a number of other rentals, but we want people to be asking each other, themselves, at any given time. I wonder what's going on at Iowa Speedway this weekend. They've always got something great going on. There's always something fun to do there, and that's really our goal.
And my last question that I have for you is, just going back, you're fairly young. I'm just 31 myself, so, you're not much younger than me. But, you've grown up in the information age like I have. And being a track promoter is always about how do you disconnect the fans away from that social media to get them out there to your facility to actually watch the race in person and not necessarily watching it on Facebook or Twitter or any other medium out there. As a track promoter, what are some of the things that you're able to do to reach out to those fans and get them in and disconnect them a little bit from that social media to come and see the live event and experience a race or a motorsports event in person?
You used a lot of keywords there in live event and experience and getting attention. That's again sort of going back to my last answer. We're looking to build events around the races, within the race events themselves that are entertaining to all ages, all different types of people. So we want a diverse set of fans coming out here and enjoying this facility, ultimately contributing to the quality of life here. So I think you get into a situation where, do you create the event itself and then build some buzz around it and then get people to come out, or, do you really promote the heck out of something and then build from there? But I think we're really looking to do both at the same time through utilizing the resources that NASCAR provides us, all that research and data, and then some of the things that they've been looking to try out for the last few years at racetracks, and a few examples will be over the next couple of weekends with what we've got going on this weekend, and then the first weekend in August we've got a couple of different marketing pieces and entertainment pieces that NASCAR's bringing in that they want to study closely. We believe this is a great facility, a great atmosphere to do that, and then ultimately take those pieces to other racetracks. But I think, from my perspective, it's all about offering a wide variety or a wide range of options when they get here. I think we have a huge advantage as a sport in that we have very large properties and a tremendous fan base that comes out just, more than just 45 minutes before the event and, leaving right after. We've got, thousands of people that come out here and camp throughout the weekend. We've got fans that come out, early morning on Friday and Saturday this weekend, and they'll tailgate all day and find their friends that they've been tailgating with for years. We've built these communities, a large community, but these smaller communities, these neighborhoods within our own property, and we've got such great potential to build upon that and, have events going on during Friday this weekend, during Saturday, leading up to the race, building that anticipation. And a lot of those events are, contribute to the value that fans see in a ticket price, and also get them to talk about it after the race weekend. If, they're always going to talk about the race, but there's more to it than just a race up here. There's things going on around the clock, and we want to build upon those and make sure that everyone's proud of their purchase, that they feel they've gotten the most out of their dollar, and are wanting to bring their friends out here to experience it. And I think that's the key, really, to reaching out to any age level, not just the millennials that we're talking about here. It's a really fun challenge, and I think something that we'll accomplish really soon here.
Well, Jimmy, I appreciate you coming on tonight, talk about what you got going on in Iowa, and I wish you the best of luck out there. Maybe one day I'll get to the Iowa cornfields and get to watch a race out there.
We would love that. We're really excited about what we've got going on the next couple of weekends here, and would love to have you come visit, and I'm sure we'll open your eyes a little bit on some of the fun pieces we have of entertainment here.
Great. Thank you. I'm going to throw you back over to Tim.
Thanks so much.
Good job, Jimmy. Good job, Steve. And I just have a statement right quick before I have a question. Y'all don't even have to bring up the age thing. Now, I'm fishing to be 44, and I've had one back surgery. Todd said he's had four, and one shoulder surgery. Just a statement there. Just trying to make it funny.
I need back
Small,
surgery. Yeah.
Oh, don't do it. I can't get over it. I had mine in 09, Jimmy, and I'm still having problems. But anyway, Jimmy, can you take a question from my good friend Todd Bigsby from Watkins Glen International?
Absolutely.
Okay, Todd, I'm gonna give you the floor with Jimmy Small and let you have a question, and I got sort of a little couple of two-fold questions I want to ask Jimmy, and then we'll let him go because I know he's busy. But Todd, you got the floor, bud. Go ahead.
Well, first off, Jimmy, thanks for taking the time and coming on. Really appreciate it.
It's a pleasure.
What is your most exciting thing, like each week when you go into different tracks and, you know, doing different stuff, what's the most exciting thing to you that pops out the most for each week?
So you know, now that I'm out here at Iowa Speedway, I don't travel like I used to. So I've gone to a few races this year. I started in Daytona and went to Phoenix and went down to Kansas, and then I'll visit Chicagoland and Kansas again this fall and probably end up in Miami. So I don't do the traveling I used to. But, I, you know, looking back, assuming this is what you were asking, looking back on the last 6 years, I think – something that was always really exciting was visiting a new city, you know, a new area of the country, enjoying, you know, what that area has to offer. And Des Moines was always one of the favorite places to visit. But it's really fun to see and meet the NASCAR fans in each area of the country and each city, and to watch them, how they prepare for a race or how they tailgate or how they – you know, enjoy that whole experience has always been really fun to see and enjoy when appropriate, of course. But that's been, I guess you could say, that probably the piece I looked forward to most, along with how the tracks have adapted to, I guess, that atmosphere, that culture, and you know, how they've sort of molded their pre-race or victory lane celebrations. You know, any other fan engagement pieces with their drivers, they all varied from market to market, and a lot of them were, you know, based on where they were in the country, and I think a lot of them were based on, you know, fan feedback. Tracks and NASCAR alike have been really, really good about reaching out to their fans and getting that feedback on, did this work, or what would you, you know, is this a good idea? And we've been no different out here at Iowa Speedway. We've made a number of adjustments this year based on fan feedback we've gotten the last few years. And, you know, I think someone could come in here to Iowa Speedway and experience racing differently than they would anywhere else. And that is really, really just unique. It truly is unique and really an exciting feature of the sport.
Well, I appreciate you taking the time and answering the question for me.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thanks, Todd. Thanks, Jimmy. Jimmy, I got sort of...
Tim, can you hear me?
Hey,
can you hear me, Tim?
Jimmy, you there? Hey, I don't know what happened to Tim. I think he dropped off here. I think he's experiencing a couple difficulties. But I had one more question for you.
Sure.
That I want to run up the poll for you a little bit. You know, you guys, you've got a short track out there, and there is a lack of short tracks, you know, other than Martinsville, other than Richmond and Darlington really out there on the schedule. What is your feeling about bringing more short tracks on the schedule, and especially bringing more short tracks into the Sprint Cup Championship?
Well, you know, I can't really comment on schedule changes for the Sprint Cup Series. You know, we're out here in Iowa and focusing on, you know, our core events, our events that we have on schedule, and really happy with what we have. I will say that Iowa Speedway is a tremendous place to race and always produces incredible racing, and that's, you know, no different at Gillette, Martinsville, at Richmond, you know, even Eldora, we can consider a short track, at least on the truck series side. So I've always been a short track racing guy since I started following the sport. It's always been my favorite type of racing. I know Martinsville, and you mentioned Darlington, just a wonderful, I love Darlington, it's very near and dear to my heart, but Martinsville in particular has always just been one of my favorite places to watch a race, and to see those cars really get on the gas and then get on the brake that quickly and move each other out of the way, and that's what short track racing really breeds. So a huge fan of that style of racing, and really, really happy to be working at a racetrack that features such a high level of short track racing.
All right, well, thank you. You know, I think I've got Tim back here real quick. You know, being out there in Iowa is kind of out there in the middle of, you know, the cornfields, as everybody would say. Anything that you guys are doing particular in that area to getting people there into the track, you know, especially with it, you know, not being around such a large populace like other tracks are?
We are, you know, we've got majority of our fan base comes from the Des Moines area as well as the Cedar Rapids market here in Iowa, but we attract fans from 23 states around the country the last time we did a survey, so we're really proud of, you know, the number of fans, first of all, that we attract and the support we received here within the state, but really proud of the fact that we're able to attract fans from that many states across the country. But it's really no surprise. You know, Iowa Speedway is located in central Iowa, but we're within a five-hour drive of, you know, four or five major markets here, whether that be Minneapolis, Chicago, St. Louis, Kansas City, Omaha. You know, we're right in the center there, so we're easily accessible right off of I-80. It's easy to get here. You know, our fans, like I said earlier, are big on camping, are big on traveling to unique places, and being the only short track west of the Mississippi, you know, on the NASCAR National Circuit with the Truck Series and Nationwide Series side, as well as the IndyCar side, we're, you know, I think that really stands out or really, you know, explains our level of interest from more than you know, a handful of states here. So as far as particular practices or you know, things we're looking to do to, I guess, get more involved in the market, we have, you know, our standard marketing and promotional campaigns, and we're really looking to involve ourselves with the local community here in Newton, with Des Moines, with Cedar Rapids, and getting involved in, you know, events around those markets year-round. We want to make sure that we're contributing to the quality of life, not just with our races, but with what we do with our assets here, how we use our facility, how we use, let's say, our pace cars, where we're taking them, how we're utilizing them to, you know, have some fun with our fans and Iowans in general, and teaming up with entities that build businesses that attract new people to Iowa. The welcome we've received as a new ownership group here in Iowa has been incredible. I think we expected that to be at a high level, but it has exceeded those expectations, and everyone wants to work with us. Everyone sees those unique qualities that we identify and are so proud of, and it's really made it pretty easy and a lot of fun to get involved and stay at the top of mind here year round. Tim, you back yet? Anyone there?
Sorry. Yeah, we're here. I'm just having a little bit of technical issues tonight for whatever reason. I appreciate you coming on tonight and talking about Iowa,
yes.
And I know you guys have the Truck Series out there this weekend, and I wish you the best of luck out there and hope you got a full crowd out there.
Thank you so much. We're anticipating two large crowds this weekend and two incredible shows, so really excited. It can't get here any sooner, that's for sure.
Well, good luck. I appreciate you coming on tonight.
Thanks so much.
Thank you. Talk to you later.
All right, bye-bye.
I'm back.
Oh, there's Tim.
I made it, but I don't know what happened to the internet. You know how it is. I call in on my cell phone. But anyway, Stephen, go ahead. I'll let you handle everything. I'm going to make a pit stop right quick, and I'll come right back.
Okay. Well, I guess the next thing we got coming up here is we got Tim Campbell, our weatherman, hanging on the line here. Maybe he'll tell us some good things about Iowa and New Hampshire this week, and I'm going to bring Tim on and talk a little bit about the weather. Hey, Tim, you're in the pit stop. You want to tell us a little bit about the weather this weekend? And please don't tell me we're getting snow here in Virginia.
Well, Suzanne said you needed some, and I told her I'd like to have some. Too hot out here.
Yeah, well, it's about 100 degrees out here, so I'd like to have some snow right about now.
Yeah, at least we wouldn't have to worry about it freezing on the roads or drifting anyway.
Yeah, that's true. So what's going on with Iowa and New Hampshire this weekend for our race schedule? We're not going to rain out this weekend, are we?
Yeah, it looks like on Friday night we're going to have mostly clear, highs in the upper 80s and lows in the 50s. And Saturday looks like mostly clear with highs in the 80s and lows in the 50s and partly cloudy skies at night. And Sunday race day looks like partly sunny with a chance of showers and thunderstorms. Highs in the lower 80s and chance of rain is 30%. Sunday night's mostly cloudy with a chance of showers, low in the mid-60s, and a 40% chance of rain on Sunday night. But hopefully it's raining back around New York and back in the eastern part of the United States, so hopefully it'll get the rain out of the system before Sunday, and that way we can go on with a nice race.
Yeah, we definitely don't need another weekend there where we're raining out, that's for sure. You got the floor, bud. You want to tell us about, give us your website, let us know what you do out there in Oklahoma and what you got coming up.
Okay, yeah, tonight we're just watching these storms. We got storms all over. We got them out in Arizona. We got storms down here in Oklahoma. We got storms in Tennessee and North Dakota and around, and we're just busy watching radar, and I have Stillwater Skywarn Storm Team, and we cover weather all over the United States, and me and my wife get out and try to do some chasing once in a while and get some good pictures, and she's a photographer, and so she makes a good partner, so we're going to, and our website, if you want to visit our website, is skywarnweather.weebly.com. And if you'd like to visit her website, her photography website, you can visit kellydphotography.weebly.com, and you can go on there and look at her pictures, and we're just out here trying to, we don't get paid a dime for doing this, what we do. We just do it because we love it. And our pay for doing all this is being able to keep somebody safe and keep somebody from getting killed. And that's all we want to do, just keep everybody safe.
All right. Well, I appreciate it. Thank you for coming on and telling us a little bit about the weather we've got going on. I appreciate you coming on every week. And you guys stay safe out there and try to stay out of some of that heat.
Okay.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, guys, have a good night,
week.
And hopefully we'll have a good race Sunday, and we'll talk to you next week.
All righty. We'll talk with you next week. Appreciate it.
Okay.
Okay, Steve. All right, I'm back. I guess. Yeah, somehow blog talk dropped me, but because my internet's still good, I don't know. But anyway, I'm on my cell phone, Stephen, but I see Suzanne has a couple of, she has a caller in the screening room, but I don't want to interrupt you. Go on with what she was going on with.
I don't know. We were just finishing up there with the weather this week and trying to keep out some of that heat around here, and hopefully we don't have any rain up there in either New Hampshire or in Iowa this weekend. Looks like we're going to have some decent racing weather out there this weekend. So, but I'll let you have the floor, bud. You know, unfortunately, I've got to jump out of here a little bit early tonight. I hate to do it on you, but I got to jump out a little bit early on you tonight. And, anything else we want to cover before I have to jump out of here?
Stephen, I can't think of it. Would you, if you want to talk about the upcoming race this weekend at Loudon, you can throw that out there for just a second if you got time.
I hadn't really
looked at nothing.
Yeah, me either. You know, I haven't had a chance to take a look at what's going on up in Loudon this weekend. I know that they've got some modified racing up there in the Sprint Cup Series racing. From what I did look at yesterday, there's 43 cars on the entry list this weekend. So nobody will be going home. I believe actually Morgan Shepherd is going to be in the 35 car for Front Row Motorsports, if I remember correctly looking at it. A couple of them that are not going to enter this weekend, if I remember, it was J.J. Yelly, the Wood Brothers, obviously, they're running a limited schedule, and Levine Family Racing will not be entered either. So it looks like, you know, they'll have a full field out there in Loudon this weekend, and, you know, they always put on a good show out there. They pack those stands down with 91,000 people plus, and, you know, I don't know how they do it. They're still one of the few tracks around here that can definitely pack them in there every single weekend.
Yes, sir. Amen. I know it. And look forward to watching that race. And, Stephen, we look forward for you and Miss Anne-Marie coming down for the October race here at Talladega Super Speedway, the Geico 500. It's going to be in the chase. We're going to have a blast. And thanks again, bud. And I know you got to take care of business. And I say Tony B's waiting in line, and I think we're going to bring Tony B and Tina Stoll on and let them do their segment, Everything Open Wheel and NHRA.
All right, bud. Well, I'm sorry I got to jump out here a little bit early this week, and you know, next week I'll be in Disney. I'm going to try and jump in there. I think you got Ron Devine coming in from BK Racing. I'm going to jump in there on that with you a couple minutes next weekend, but. Yeah, I'll talk to you next weekend. Like I said, you know, we'll have a good race this weekend in New Hampshire and Iowa.
Sounds good, bud. Tell Miss Anne-Marie we said hello, and tell the little one we said hello, and y'all be safe going to Orlando, bud. We'll talk at you next week.
All right, bud. Thanks a lot. I'll talk to you later.
All right, bud. Bye. Okay, that was Stephen Wilson having to jump off a little bit early, and ladies and gentlemen, I'm sorry that I dropped. It wasn't my internet. Somehow Blog Talk Radio dropped me, but we've got Tony B hanging over here on the side. He does his segment, Everything Open Wheel. Tony is a former Indy 500 championship crew member with Dario Franchitti when he won the 2012 Daytona 500. So he's got that big rock on his finger. When he comes to Talladega, he said he's going to let me wear it. I want to bring Tony in first, and then we'll bring Mrs. NHRA Tina Stoll in next.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Tony, what's going on, my friend?
You just got to like an entry like that.
Oh, yeah.
Things are going good. Racing is amazing. And, you know, unfortunately, a lot of us lost out with the rain over the weekend.
Yeah, you got that.
But I have to be honest with you, and Steven's already gone, but, you know, I said I was picking Jimmy Johnson, but I did for a while, but when it came
time for race day, Jimmy Johnson wasn't on my team. We've been having a lot of good luck and a lot of fun with the fantasy motorsports. And I can tell you, there's some great racing fixing to come at us. And, you know, one thing just for USAC is the world-renowned Indiana Sprint Week. It's 7 days of sprint car racing. And let me tell you, brother, until you've been to it and seen it and see what these fellows do for 7 days in and out, it's incredible.
I bet it is, Tony.
Oh, my goodness. It's just somewhat amazing, but it is well worth the ticket price. The fans get an extreme close-up with the drivers, the sponsors, and the team owners, and it's some of the best racing you'll ever lay your eye on. And not only that, happening in Ohio on the 11th and the 12th is the World of Outlaws going for $50,000 to win at Eldora Speedway.
That's
the Kings
true.
Royal has been around for many years. And let me tell you, that's racing for some money in a sprint car.
Oh, yes, sir. You got that right.
And, you know, so there is a lot going on. USAC starts on Friday the 11th. The Kings Royal at Eldora Speedway starts the 11th and ends on the 12th as well. And for those people out there that are into open wheel, and I'm sure everybody noticed Lewis Hamilton wins again in Formula One in Great Britain. Nico Rosberg had some problems, and Lewis Hamilton brings home the Mercedes for, my goodness, they have only lost one race to a Renault in Canada, to Daniel Ricciardo. So Lewis Hamilton.
That's unreal, Tom. That's unreal.
Excuse me. I'm sorry. Lewis Hamilton and Nico Rosberg have won every other race. They're off until the 20th, where they will go to Germany. And that looks to be good. And everybody might have seen or knew what happened at Pocono with the Verizon IndyCar Series. Juan Pablo Montoya won the race with a damaged car, won the race, and it was the first time in 14 years since Juan Pablo had sat in victory lane in an IndyCar. And if anybody interested or knows somewhat how the Australian Willpower acts, he got in trouble again. He was blocking his own teammate, Elio Castroneves, and the replay and then his talk about the replay didn't go over very well. But I will tell you, the IndyCar division is led the top three spots by Roger Penske, and you got to give that to him.
Yes, sir. Amen. Amen, Tony. And Tony, can I bring Tina on right now? And we've got
yeah,
Tina
bring her on.
Waiting too. Okay, we want to bring Miss Tina Stull. Where's my button? Here it is.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Hey, Tina, I'm about to wear that button out. I'm sorry, but I love it. Tim, you're at a pit stop with Tim. Where Stephen Wilson had to go, Stephen had some stuff come up. It's you and Tony B, and Suzanne has your guest sitting on the side. So just whenever you want to bring him on, if y'all want to talk a minute, just let me know, and we'll bring Mr. Don O'Neill on.
Okay, that sounds great. Don actually raced out in Norwalk this weekend, and so just being on site and kind of we talked a little bit after his race, and I thought, you know what, instead of me repeating this stuff, let me bring on a racer that was actually there, and that actually is a track that is closer to his home, and so he's raced it for years. So
very good, Tina,
you know,
very good.
Hello, Tony. How are you this week?
Hello, I'm very good, sweet. How are you?
I'm doing mighty fine. Got a little bit out in the golf, got a little bit of sunburn, but I'm feeling human again.
Okay, well, and thank you for everything that you've been doing for me. I noticed some different things on Twitter, and I appreciate that.
Well, I tell you, Twitter's a great way to get everybody a little bit more knowledge about all our different sports. You know, there's so much more in common than you'd believe, but I learned that through Twitter, and so I'm glad if I can help you out at all.
Amen, absolutely. And I'm glad you have a guest, and the show is yours today, and I would like to sit back and listen, and we'll go from there. So have the floor, Miss Tina.
Well, thank you very much. Whenever Suzanne brings Don in, but I do want you to stay around because there's some good insights. I more than just who won and lost, I really like your input on, you know, kind of the same kind of thought process that goes through when you have different conditions from track to track and such.
Absolutely. Did John Force win at Norwalk?
You know what? I was going to let cover all that with Don. Cause
okay.
I had a DVR failure, and other than just, you know, looking at the final standings, don't have much insight. So I don't know how we know when Don's on, but
are you ready, Tina? Don's sitting in standby.
Okay, yeah, send him on in.
Okay, we're gonna bring Don O'Neill.
Don
O'Neill into the pit stop with Tim Spann, Stephen Wilson, and Tony B and Miss MHRA Tina Stowe.
Hello, Don.
Folks, how y'all doing?
I'm doing good. Hey, thanks very much for
Let's get ready to rumble!
Sorry about that, Don. Delayed reaction. I'll let y'all have the floor. I'm gonna walk around. Listen, y'all got
okay. Okay. Well, hey, Don, I was just saying thanks for coming on in. And I was just going to ask you a little bit. I know that you were out at Norwalk, and you told me a little bit about it, but I just wanted to kind of find out from you what you thought about, you know, how the race went, and just maybe a little bit about it. I know you've raced that track a lot more than I, but if you had any insights or that, and would love to hear how you did as well.
Well, yeah, Norwalk, being the fact it's one of the last few standing, if you will, in a small group of family-owned NHRA racetracks, the Bader family, between Bill Sr. and Bill Jr., and Bill's daughter, Bobby, they just do a great job of making sure that they go out of the way to not only take care of the drivers, but the biggest thing is just the show they put on for the fans. The extravagant fireworks that we had on 4th of July night, Bob Motes in the jet truck down to a pound of ice cream for a dollar, that the line was at some point that you waited in line over an hour and a half to get to because it was so long. So, I mean, they just know how to do it there. It's actually the largest attended NHRA divisional on the series schedule, I believe, this past year, even though it rained almost every day. They had over 40,000 fans that attended for an NHRA divisional. So the Bader family, they just know how to do it. They're in the entertainment business, and motorsports just happens to be a byproduct of it. So I always enjoy going there, and just being the second year, last year they started giving away the Summit Motorsports Park Ice Cream Scoop Award that goes along with the Wally Trophy at the NHRA Nationals. Each year they started that tradition, so this is the second year, and I'm 0-2 at it again. So keep going ahead and cracking away at it, but I did hear there earlier that there was a question about whether or not John Force won. He did get him an ice cream scooper, so he had a pretty good weekend.
Oh, he did. Well, I tell you, that's a beautiful track. I know I've raced it only once way back when I first started racing, but definitely, you know, definitely was one of my favorite tracks just, you know, the first time out. Now, are by any chance, are you going to be running Denver next week?
No, we're not going to be making the Western Swing this year. That's a pretty grueling schedule. We're just coming off three straight weeks here in the Midwest with Chicago built in there right before this race at Norwalk. We get to enjoy this weekend off, if you're going to call it enjoyment. I'm going to go watch somebody get married, and we'll be back on the road next week to Columbus and get spun all up for the tail end of our Division III series in the Midwest here with St. Louis, and rolling on into Bowling Green and back to Indy for the big go later on in Labor Day.
Well, I think we'll probably won't meet up again till Indy, because I'm planning on making that trip myself. Hey, I had a question for you. I noticed that, like, the altitude, thinking into next weekend with Denver being there, and it's sitting at 5,700 feet, just regular altitude, and Norwalk sitting at 700. You know, that's like a 5,000-foot jump. What was the weather like? What was your weather station showing you as far as the density altitude?
Maybe actually, for the weekend, based on history, I've been racing in Norwalk since the early 90s when I was in IFA. So I did not have any weather that I could even remotely go to. It was so beautiful with it being in the 70s, the barometer hovering around 29. 29-20 grains were hovering in the 50-60 for the biggest part of the majority of the day. Density altitude was somewhere around 2,100 feet, and we get the corrected at times down to 1,300 feet. So it was a beautiful weather weekend.
Cannot complain about that. I mean, definitely anything around 1,200 feet, anything between 800 and 1,200 is I mean, my car really likes that because it's a little bit more predictable. Now, you throw something like that and you look at thinking of this week up in Denver, man, if they get a little bit of heat or humidity, that's going to be like a, you know, easily a 6,000-foot swing off of, you know, for these cars.
The only ones that will be having a big problem with that are the naturally aspirated guys, you know, obviously post-op and
sportsmen.
Yeah, the sportsmen will, you know, there'll be carburetor changes and gear changes going on and trying to get things situated to be able to meet the challenge of the high altitude. You take first five guys were going into the 50s most of the time this past weekend. Heck, I don't even know what was it last year. I think it might have been 690s or something like that.
I haven't been in a couple of years mainly because I have to change up my carburetor, and I couldn't find any guys that wanted to go that far for that race, just because it's such a change, and you know your numbers just don't really help you much. But man, that's owned by Bandimere. John Bandimere is the one that built that, and for people who may not know about that track, he literally, I mean, this is an innovative guy, cut the racetrack into the side of a mountain and just kind of removed enough of the mountain so that he had a flat enough space. It's, you know, not the huge pits that you see in a lot of the things where they're real deep wide. It's a pretty narrow but very, very long set of pits, but just gorgeous, just absolutely gorgeous. And if you catch it in the right weather, just absolutely beautiful. But, you know, I know just as a person, not as a motor, I'm huffing and puffing up there because that's quite a bit up in the air.
Yeah, so mostly. I mean, it really is. And from what I understand up there in Denver, too, the reason with it being built on the side of the mountain, they keep the staging lanes with some scoreboards behind the tower so the racers can actually see what's going on. It's one of the other more racer-friendly facilities on the tour as well, especially with it also being a family-owned facility.
Oh yeah, the Bandimeres are definitely family family people. I was out there one year doing the divisional / national, And there's about 3 weeks in between, and we left it. Most of us left our rigs there just so we could go. Came back for 4th of July, had a great time. And that year the race was the following weekend, and just a hoot. But, well, that is good. Anything else happen out at Norwalk that just, you know, a little bit different than any other race, or that stuff that maybe people who were watching it on TV would have missed because, you know, when you're not on the ground, you just don't see as much?
Not really. There was a few little small incidents. Ricky Smith ran off in the racetrack in Pro Mod. It wasn't that big of a deal. There was a few little flash fires. The weather was just so nice. The crew chiefs were really swinging for the fences. Track records were the first pro qualifying session. I think the track record in Pro Stock got reset like 6 different times. But probably for me, the whole weekend, the big story really would have been the fact of Larry Morgan putting a deal together with Travis Mazza, who his father was, you know, a well-known former sportsman racer back here in the Midwest, had a real popular restaurant around the Columbus area. And for Larry to go out of his way and help Travis out to get his pro stock license, and for Travis to be able to compete this past weekend in Norwalk, flying his dad's car number, his driver number, that to me that really put a nice cherry on top, if you will, for the weekend, to see somebody come out and put the effort into it to be able to compete in NHRA Pro Stock, especially in the honor of his father. And they did the best they could at the racetrack to give Travis as much PR. And you know, he struggled to get down the racetrack the first couple times, and then he finally made it down. Nothing that was going to set the world on fire, but still to be able to stage up and know.
You know, it takes a lot of guts just to do it. I don't think, you know, a lot of us think, I know when I was thinking about racing, you know, I thought, oh, you know, that looks fun. And then when you actually have to get in the car and actually do it, there's a whole new level of like, whoa, what I get myself into. Because it's not as easy, especially those that, you know, anything that's a shifter. You know, there's a lot going on in that car in a very, very short period of time. So, you know, that's, you know, hats off. And it's like, you know, there is a racing family. And it's nice when everybody kind of pulls together to make stuff happen.
Oh, yeah. It was great. And, you know, we can't shy away from the fact that the sportsman guys there, we had some really great guys and businesses and families that won some special awards this past weekend. The Collector Tethers group with Lynn Ellison and Scott Lemon, they won best crew. And then good old boy Thomas Martino, who, you know, I'm sure you know, he's going to be on the Discovery Channel here coming up pretty soon. Their new top dragster, well, new to them, if you will, the Matt Sherrill 2010 ride, won best appearing car in Norwalk this past weekend. So just to have some good family friends and to be able to see them get recognized for all their hard work and their small businesses and their PR and marketing efforts to correlate with a big family atmosphere that the Baiters put on. It was a great weekend, definitely one that will stick out in my mind for many years to come.
Well, I tell you, I miss being up there. When I heard about everybody's driving back, the one thought is, oh, I'm finally home. You know, it's kind of nice to be home, but, man, there's I'd trade it all if I could have been at the track. Well, hey, I really appreciate you coming on and just kind of, you know, giving us some info on what was going on this weekend. Is there anything that you want to, you know, definitely everybody should follow you on Twitter, Don O'Neill Racing. He's on Twitter. I follow him, so that's just best recommendation you can get. But is there anything else you want to highlight? Or before you go, Tony, you have any questions, any input, anything along that? Not to put you on the spot, but...
Well, you're not putting me on the spot. You know, I've been there, done that, and I've done everything in my motorsports career but drag racing.
We're going to fix that.
Yes, absolutely, and I'm entertained by that, and I look forward to that. I do believe Tony Schumacher got beat by Antron Brown.
Well, that was, I believe that was in the semifinals when that happened. I'm a huge Sean Langdon guy because Sean and I are buddies, and he's a two-time Super Comp world champ and one of those, you know, storybook endings, if you will, for his career, for him to come through Junior Dragsters up into Super Comp and then obviously move forward and end up in Top Fuel and be a world champ last year. So I'm a huge Sean fan. Anton's definitely on the radar. He's just now getting really involved with his youngsters, Junior Dragster career. That's really well. But, yeah, I believe Anton had to dismiss Tony off there, I think probably in the semis, if I'm not mistaken. If my memory serves me correct, but I'm kind of old, so I might be off.
That's quite all right.
You're with a bunch of old people here, so you're fine.
Anton, you know, he's making a push. There's no doubt about that. He's making a push this year with his fifth win already. So we'll just have to see how things continue on the Western Swing. A lot of times this turns into being the last stretch, the countdown, you know, we get the Indy and start over, if you will. So looking forward to it. Getting ready to get busy race time.
Hey, Don, how many times did you end up in the other lane against Sean?
Actually, Sean and I have only ever raced against each other in qualifying. We have never had a situation where...
Well, I'll tell you, you're a lucky dog, because I think I raced him twice and got handed the trailer both times. The guy was beaving back then, I mean, consistent, 00-something. He's definitely a wicked racer, whether he was in Super Comp. In fact, I'm a little bit glad to see him, you know, no longer running Super Comp and up in Top Fuel, because that was definitely somebody I did not want to roll up against.
Well, if that would be the case for history, then I guess we're just going to have to figure out if put Luke Bogacki in a Top Fuel car or a Pro Stocker pretty soon to get him out of the portion.
There are a few names I would happily graduate.
the season that Luke's putting together right now currently in Super Gas, him and Trevor Larson, and their story, I mean, they're just, both of them are on fire, whatever they were going to. And the season that Luke had last year in Super Comp, being the defending Lucas Oil champ, I think that'll be another storybook deal for him to win Super Comp World Champ last year and come up around. It looks like it's going to be a real strong tight finish with him and Trevor to finish out the year in Super Gas. But it's just sportsman racing is so tough. And, heck, just think how tough it would be if we got a lot of those pros to fall back down and let them try to give their hand to it and let ESPN follow them around for a little while and get in 10-pile and 12-pile packages later on and see how they like leaving in first and second round. I think that'd probably be a little bit more humbling for them and be good media for us with the fans and the sport.
Well, hey, I really appreciate it. I'd love to have you back on, and maybe I don't want to take up too much time here. So, Tony, don't let me go too long-winded. But
it's all yours.
Is it fine? Because I have one more question for Don.
You go right ahead.
A lot of people, I appreciate it. My brain's already going 100 miles an hour. A lot of people, you know, assume that with sportsman racing, it's easier because it's slower. Because we're not going 300 miles an hour, and granted, there's definite fear factor difference, but there can you like in a shortened version, because I can't sum up why sportsman racing is so competitive, and in you know like you talked 3,000 package and maybe give some insight onto what the sportsman is really up against when they go out there to go down the track, and it's not necessarily about speed or being the fastest.
Well, the biggest difference that you can really attribute to everything to is the fact that in the pro ranks, everything is about as quick and as fast as you can get it done. So you really have to depend on your team, your crew chief, your engine builder, whoever's doing the back half of the car, the rear end setup, whatever the case is, you know, in each class, every one of them's got their own real majority focus that has to be applied. And, of course, then you apply everything collectively as a whole. But that's the goal. And 9 times out of 10, that goal is driven by financial. When you come down into the sportsman ranks, there's two ends of the racetrack. There's a starting line and a finish line. And 9 times out of 10, you've got to try to win both ends to get that win right. And it's not always completely contributed to financial, because a lot of times we all can go out and acquire some of the same equipment, electronics or, you know, transmissions, converters, things of this nature, and, you know, our expense turns out into building the car and the engine, and then you just get some luck and some skill in the driving. And it is difficult. And I tell, you know, that's probably the biggest question I hear or complaint, concern is that fans don't understand super gas or super top racing or stock or super stock. I tell fans, don't sit in the grandstands close to the starting line. Anybody can watch burnout anytime you want to. Go as far down the racetrack as you possibly can to get up as high as you possibly can and see two people going down the racetrack at 170 miles an hour and look at them looking at each other trying to figure out who wants to take the finish line or what the other one's going to do in the strategy of the game of drag racing. And that's where the competitiveness of it is, to understand what's going on in the 8.9 seconds or the 9.9 seconds. Or even this past weekend with one of my bosses going 650s over his shoulder to a six-second car at 248 miles an hour. That is where the competitiveness, the skill, the challenge comes in. Not saying there's a lack of skill in running top fuel or a pro stock or anything else. That's definitely not the case. But there's more involved from the standpoint of the driver and the setup in the sportsman ranks than there is up in the pro side. And top fuel car, you know, once a driver leaves the starting line, I mean, he's pretty much at the mercy of the clutch setup and the tune-up that went into the blower and the cylinder heads. And, I mean, that's, you know, necessity is right there, and that's where the experience and the value comes in. So, you know, it's not to downplay it, but, you know.
No, I another way of saying it might be is that the pros, they're once they leave that starting line and they got the reaction time, their job is to keep it from crashing. You know, keep it hooked up, keep it down, and go through. It's they're not making a choice on the other end to, they don't really have another choice. Just get it across the finish line, you know, in one piece, and that's it. When it comes to the sportsman racer, they have to be thinking about, could they possibly be breaking out? And breaking out means you go faster than that handicap or that index for that particular race. In our case, 8.9 seconds. So you could have a car that could go 8 seconds, and I could have a car that goes 9 seconds. You could go down there, but if you don't do your job as a driver and you break out, you've given me the race. So there's a lot of, you know, so in sportsmen, and it's a little bit different in each class depending on that, but in each class that driver has to make a determination what his action is going to be. Sometimes it's stay in it and just drive through the finish line and hope you don't break out, or know that you're not going to break out based on how you set the car up. Other times you get down there and you're trying to adjust for maybe who left the line first, who has, you know, if the other person is dead late, you don't have to cut that line that close, and you don't have to take the risk of breaking out. And you might be able to make some choices down there. But, you know, there's a million ways to guess wrong and – you know, lose that race at the other end just the same way as you can, you know, it's a hero or zero in a matter of 10 feet.
That's exactly right. And that happens on more occasions than not. And you just, you know, you pack it up, whether, you know, you lose a good round or you make the wrong decision, you just pack your stuff up and you move on to the next race.
Well, I know you make the right decision way more often than not. So, you know, feel free to mentor me at any time. You're a damn good racer. And, you know, I appreciate you kind of helping me. Because I'm not always very good at explaining this stuff, but definitely appreciate all the insight you're giving us from Norwalk. Now, Tony, back to you. Is there any other questions?
No, but I do look forward to meeting this gentleman in Indianapolis, and he may want to be part of a program that is safe for everybody. Brace yourself, the best safety device in the world, and we're coming to America, and people will know about us very soon, and we're going to sponsor people like Don and Tina and be involved immensely in motorsports.
Well,
and
I'll tell you, yeah. Well, that's definitely, you know, definitely I'll make sure that we all get to meet in that. You know, I failed to mention how I met Don. Don served in our military as well as was a, and correct me if I'm wrong because I'm not sure of the terminology, but he was a representative of the Army while he actually was actively racing. He was also on active duty. And
God bless him for that.
Back when I was doing, I think it was, I want to say Las Vegas, he came out to one of the bases with us and helped but greet the troops, and it's always been a place where when the troops were at the races, we'd go by, check in on him, and, you know, not only has he been a huge supporter of the troops, you know, he is one, and, you know, just an extra, especially being so close to 4th of July, special thanks to you, Don, for your service. We appreciate it. I know that you are no longer active duty, but once a soldier, always a soldier. And,
amen.
You know.
Well, I appreciate that. Yeah, I was very fortunate to survive 22 years in the Army and be able to work for recruiting command for the last half of my career and be able to represent the Army as I traveled around the country doing recruiting events and motorsports events and community events. And claim the fame to be the first active duty soldier to make it to a final round of the NHRA National Event 2010 at Indy for the U.S. Nationals. So that's probably why I look so much forward to going to Indy every year this year, being the 60th. You know, there's big numbers. Only one person can put their name tied up with it, so I'd like to put my name associated with the 60th U.S. Nationals and be the winner in NHRA Super Comp, but I'm sure there'll be 160 other Super Comp guys that are going to run through the gate there on Wednesday wanting to put their name beside it, too. That's probably why it makes it one of the most competitive classes in sportsman racing to be able to take on the Wally and win in. So I'm very fortunate to be in the situation that I am, be able to compete at the level I am, and wouldn't be able to do it if it wasn't for my career in the Army, as well as being able to work for Drivers for Sale here in Evansville, Indiana, in the family business. So very fortunate and blessed, and I'm just going to keep on letting go of the button until my hands can't grip it anymore.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it. You're welcome back anytime, and I'm sure I'll be calling you to do another review or give you some insight. I absolutely appreciate you taking the time out to talk with us today.
Well, thank you all very much for having us on, and you've already given my Twitter a plug, so follow us on Facebook as well, Don O'Neill Racing and DragstersForSale.com, and we'll see you on the other side.
Okay, we'll see you out there.
Thank you.
Well, that was awesome. I'll tell you, Tony, you are going to love meeting this guy. He is, he's got his stuff together. He really does. And awesome racer, but also, you know, a good man. And, you know, it's definitely there. You appreciate having those people around you, especially when a lot of times we'll go to a track and we may not know as many racers.
Mm-hmm.
As we'd like, but you always got those few people that you know you can count on if you need a part or something, you know, need some help or need some advice or be talked off the ledge when the weather goes funky or whatever. But
gives great meaning to the word team.
Yes, absolutely. And he makes a good point. Is we're probably talking. I think he said 160. We're going for, you thought NASCAR was bad with so many numbers of cars and one trophy, in our class that we run, there's anywhere from 160. In fact, I remember back in when I was first racing about 10 years ago, we'd have 220 entries for one trophy.
For one Wally.
One Wally. And you look and you go, 220. And then on top of it, I think the winnings are 1,800 if you win. Considering your entry was 300, that's really more like 1,500 to win. And you go,
wow.
So you have 220 people fighting it out for $1,500.
Wow.
And that's if you're the one who, I love the point because I never really thought about it that way. is every race there are two races. You got to win the race at the starting line. You got to win the race at the finish line. So instead
Absolutely.
Of it just being eight rounds, you got 16 rounds of no mistakes.
Hey, when I was younger, a buddy of mine ran Supergas, and they run on a 990 index.
It's absolutely the same. Go ahead. Go ahead.
I didn't understand your division was you do have to win when you leave, and you got to win when you finish. And I didn't realize that you had an index and a breakout.
Yeah. That 990 index, the Supergas is basically this, in fact, Supergas cars can race in Super Comp. Most
mm-hmm.
of them don't want to, but there are a few crossovers. But a 990 index versus an 890 index.
Wow.
But all the rules are the same. And what happens is you, when you leave that line, you know, that's going to determine part of what's quoting your package. And that is, you know, what your light is. And then at the other end, how close you are to the dial or the index, 890 or 990.
Mm-hmm.
And then the combination of that, too, tells you who wins.
Wow.
So a lot of times, now at the other end, as long as you don't break out, it's whoever crosses the line first. But, you know, probably 50% of the races, they're
mm-hmm.
break, it's a double breakout.
Wow.
So it comes down to who broke out by less. And that's why what he was talking about was when you sit down at the finish line, you'll see these guys go down there, and within about 100 feet of the end, you'll see them dump, which is, you know, hit the brakes to slow up because they're set fast, and you'll start seeing these guys dumping each other. And, you know, if you both don't dump, it's whoever set up closest, so you're both going to break out. If one guy can get down there and hit the brakes and the other guy doesn't have time to react, he can get the other guy to break out, and he won't break out by as much. So it's kind of this game of, like, I mean, I've seen guys down there. Sometimes if you're listening to the races, you hear them at the other end going, wah, 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 with the gas. What they're doing,
yeah.
they're coming on and off the gas, but the second you hear somebody come off the gas, they come off the gas. So they'll get back in it. Then you hear the other guy get back in it.
Exactly.
And or they know that, you know, three womps on the – you know, off the throttle is enough to kill a certain amount of time because they know that car so well. So there's so much going on. And I tell you, one of my frustrations is, and this is probably going to get me in trouble, but with NHRA does not value the sportsman racer. They dismiss it as like, okay, it's popcorn and you know, bathroom time. Where the pros have run their round, and now it's time for everybody to go buy your swizzle sticks and your beers and your T-shirts, and we'll run the sportsman while you're gone so you don't miss anything. And really,
well,
the thing is, there's more racing going on in with the sportsmen than you'll see anywhere else. You go up to the top end, there's always bleachers kind of at the finish line. You go up there and you watch it. That's where all the drivers hang out.
And, well, I can tell you one thing, and I would really like Tim DeSpain back on here because I'd like to know what was said about this today. But maybe it's time for the drivers and the team owners in NHRA to form a division like NASCAR is. And I just...
You can't handle the truth!
I don't think I can handle the truth, Tim. But
okay, I'm back, y'all. I'm just sitting back and listening. What you got, tell me, B?
Well, I was talking to Tina, and Tina was talking about how sometimes NHRA doesn't bleed down to them, and you know, with what NASCAR is doing, maybe NHRA needs to do it, and I'm really concerned about what NASCAR is doing. It's reminiscent of what CART and the IRL did to IndyCar, but they have formed a group led by Hendrick Ganassi, Stewart, Michael Waltrip Racing, and the list goes on, and it's big. And what do you think of that?
You're talking about sort of like a bitch gripe list, Tony, for, I didn't
mean
to say that.
They formed like they're going to be dictating to NASCAR, or NASCAR dictating to them how things are going to run. It's a committee.
Oh, so you're talking about like a union.
Yes.
And what they tried to do years and years and years ago, I can't remember what year it was, y'all don't get me lying here at Talbot City Speedway, that everybody boycotted. I think drivers need to have their opinion, but I don't think there needs to be a union in NASCAR that is going to dictate.
Well, they just formed this committee. It should be all over the news.
Well,
okay, which, Tony, I've been really, 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 really busy the past couple of days. No, I hadn't looked. And myself, you know, I hold a bargaining unit job here at Coos Valley Electric, and I'm a union member too. But I don't think that, I mean, I think that the drivers need to have their input, but I don't think they need to dictate what NASCAR does, if that sounds right. I don't want to cross the line and get myself in trouble with NASCAR.
Well,
I can't
tell
you exactly how it's going to go. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, and now NHRA does have something similar to that, which is we have driver representatives. So for each, they'll have a driver's meeting, and what they usually do is pick one of the drivers from each category. In fact, my crew chief has been the driver rep before for SuperComp. And what they do is they pick the most influential, experienced drivers in each one of those classes. It really understands, because everybody's got an idea, change this rule, without a real understanding of how that would have a tumble-down effect. You know, how that would impact, you know, you may think it's going to do this, and it's not. It's going to do such and such. Like, one of the issues on the board with SuperComp is 890 is incredibly slow for what our cars can do. So there's been talk for a long time about maybe we should make the classes an 850 car. And because we're having, in our thing, we're having, when I started just 10 years ago, I had a car that went like 148. And the guys that were going fast were going maybe 170. Now in my class, 170 is like middle of the road, and guys are passing you at 190. And so it might make sense to speed that up just so that cars would be going about the same speed, and it would, you know, make it a little bit safer racing. You wouldn't have the dumping so hard in that. So we have driver representatives. So when they go to a meeting, if they think something is going wrong in their class, or you know, a new rule is coming in, or people are there's a lot of cheating. And I don't want to say cheating, but, you know, if people are, you found a new something that's not fair, they'll bring it up in the meeting and that. So there is some representation.
Well, this is called Race Team Alliance.
Uh-huh.
It is formed by the top 9 teams in NASCAR presently. And with bylaws and an executive committee is to bring in the remaining Sprint Comp races, aim and negotiate the terms on board.
Right. Right. And Tony, I will definitely agree. I mean, you know, there needs to be, you know, just like Tina said too, you know, you have these people that really talk to the bigwigs in NHRA, the bigwigs in NASCAR, the bigwigs in Indy. And I will agree, yes, I mean, you know, there needs to be a group talk.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if it comes down to a safety situation, no. I mean, you know, say if everybody in, you know, all the top teams that you're talking about in NASCAR Sprint Cup Series, say they want to come together and we want to do away with 55-mile-an-hour pit road speed. No,
right.
I don't agree with that. But yeah,
I don't agree with
that
either.
Yes. Thank you, Tony. I do agree with, you know, with, how's it, you know, it's sort of like a players union, like in Major League Baseball, I'm trying to think, where everybody sits down at a round table
talk, discuss about, you know, why do we got this route, why do we got that route, I will definitely agree with that, and I'm sure Tina will agree too. You know,
well, the USA Today quoted, the new business association aims to improve the efficiency of NASCAR, and they are represented, the people in RTA, Race Team Alliance, have won 11 Sprint Cup championships, is among the owners in the new Race Team Alliance. That's powerful.
Yes, you're amen, Tony. Yes,
almost as powerful.
You are right.
As Miss NHRA Tina Stahl.
Right, but then, yes, amen, Tony. But
yeah,
then, you know, I'm not trying to stir nothing up. But I have all three rule books for the 2014 Cup Nationwide Truck, and I've got a rule book for the ARCA. And when it's wrote down in a rule, you cannot change it. And, you know, every NASCAR driver, when they renew their NASCAR license every year, they agree to that rule book. Just
absolutely.
Like I told you earlier, I mean, you know, myself and Suzanne, we were going to go to Richmond, September 6th. Well, me and Suzanne got offered media credentials and everything, you know, first thing you're going to say, yes, I'm coming. Thank you very much. Anyway, I don't want to mess your name up. But, yeah, and then when I come back to work, I found out I have a mandatory meeting, annual meeting, with all of our consumers at the co-op here that we have to be at the Hall of Fame here at Talladega Superspeedway. And it's wrote down in the memo, you must attend. And, you know, I was like, well, you know, I got to cancel my flight, I got to cancel my hotel. But when it's wrote down in a rule and everything, I know, Tony, you've been around sport too, and Tim, you have too. Everything that is in that rule book, everything that has come out through NASCAR, NHRA, IndyCar, Sprint Cars, every rule is just like a rule that is wrote here at my local electric co-op. Everything was wrote in blood. Every rule was wrote in blood. And you cannot change that. And, you know, I understand where some of the drivers and teams are coming from as far as wanting to tweak this, tweak that. Yeah, but, I mean, you know, sit down and discuss it. You know, just like you said, Tony, just like Tina said. But when it's black and white and it's for a safety reason, I don't think you have an argument.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it is, you know, the more hands in the pot, you kind of got to sit back and say, we trust that they're doing what they're supposed to be doing. And, you know, it doesn't, trust me, as a driver, you don't always feel that way. There are tons of times where you feel like this ain't fair. It just doesn't make sense. But every exception, and we've seen it in our wonderful law of this country, every exception very, very rarely closes a loophole. And very rarely does it solve the problem it was intended to solve, but it rather creates additional problems, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yes, ma'am.
So it's this,
yes,
stuff,
ma'am.
Is, you know, the reason why NASCAR is the way it is that, you know, how many years of history did it take to get to here? You go in there and people start trying to perfect it, and you're more than likely going to make some bad mistakes, And I start to think about, you know, all of us, you know, you get a bunch of drivers at the end of the day and something happens and everybody gets to sharing their opinion. And you got 15 different opinions. And these,
mm-hmm.
you know, a lot of times I can look and I can go, hey, I respect every one of these drivers. I mean, I'm not saying I respect all of them, but I mean, I can sit there with a group and they may have extremely opposite ideas of what's going to be better for the sport. And it's really hard because, you know, at my level, I'm not trying to oversee the entire sport. I'm trying to oversee the part that's affecting me. And you start to give, you know, you take away the chiefs and you try to make everybody with an Indian, you know, have a problem. What happens in a, you know, even though they're the top 10 or top 9 teams, you said, what happens to a little guy who has nobody, you know, he doesn't
exactly.
have the budgets and, you know, who's watching out for him, because these, you know, this is a lot of money, and it's, I'm not talking from a greed standpoint, but there's a huge win-fail. You know, somebody, you know, if I go out and spend $1 million racing, the most I can lose is $1 million. And look at how much some of these teams have on the line. So they're going to do what they need to protect their sponsor, what they're going to do to protect their team, what they're going to do to protect their jobs, and so forth. We will see in a complete elimination of the little guy that is starting out, or a one-car team.
Exactly. If you have the top nine teams, NASCAR have formed this race team alliance, that's not J.J. Yelly.
Mm-hmm.
Who is a start and stop. You know, he qualifies, he makes the race, finishes very few of them. It's about trying to pay for the tires and have the money for that day, not forever.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, you know.
It's like a double-edged sword, Tony. It's like a double-edged sword, ain't it, Tony?
Yeah. Absolutely. And, you know, I'm old enough to remember the problems that IndyCar has gone through with the ups and downs and the changes. And, you know, NASCAR and NHRA and IndyCar, they're all great divisions. And we don't want to see them change up and run what we do. Just can't have it.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right, Tony. What's your take on that, Tony?
Well, I tell you, I've seen probably one of the worst examples that's happening right now in NHRA is they decide to go to this four wide.
Oh.
And, you know,
wow.
It's because of spectators. And I'm thinking, really? You know, 10,000 horsepower times two, 20,000 horsepower coming off the line, going down in under around 3 seconds, isn't enough. We're going to put four out there. The part of it is that none of the drivers will admit openly that they don't like it because of the pressure, because we're talking there are 16, you know, there's 16 top fuel drivers, there's 16 funny car drivers, and 16 pro stock, outside of a few, you know, maybe a half a handful of others. So it's like a very small group of guys that are, you know, the NHRA is listening to everything they say. So nobody comes out openly and says it. But, you know, because somebody got this great idea that this would be big bucks and it would, you know, make more people like the sport, they change that up. And, you know, what's akin to happen is if we said, okay, guess what, everybody on the foot, you know, when Super Bowl comes around, each side gets two extra players. I mean, it's not the same game. It's an entirely different sport. So when you go into the four wide, you know, you can throw everything out. I mean, when these guys are lining up on the line, they're listening to the RPMs in the other car. They're basing, you know, you can hear them get up on the chip. You can, you know, there's a lot that goes on that goes through a driver's mind. And it's, how can you do that with four cars? So
right.
It's kind of like there's kind of this a little bit of heat of warning is that when people really want to change up the sport, one, make sure that they've been a driver at some point in their life so they have any idea what they're doing. And, you know, but it can be dangerous. It definitely is something where, you know, any time that you have large rule changes or these big strategy changes that are done on impulse, it's rarely a good idea.
Yeah.
It's ones that they've sat back and made slow incremental changes, a little bit here, a little bit there, to kind of, you know, fix it, you know, countdown. We added the countdown just a few years ago, and basically, from what I understand, just kind of basically saw NASCAR was doing that, worked well for them, and we'll try it. It seems to be working out pretty well. But, you know, at the same time, it's almost impossible to go backwards and go back to the way things used to be. So it's, you know, so it's like you think drivers and those, you know, when you're desperate to try to field a team or field a car or whatever, there's a lot of things that you think would fix the problem and make things easier. And when you have individual drivers and individual teams trying to, like, dictate those things, it's probably not going to be beneficial to the sport in the long run.
That's what worries me. Take her away.
Yeah, I know it too. I know it, Tina. Yeah, I mean, you know, you brought up a good point. You know, I hate to bring this up, but, you know, when Dale Earnhardt lost his life at Daytona International Speedway, you know, they brought up the safety barriers. And then I'm going to go back again to talk, you know, every roof rode up with, you know, blood. And since then, they've, and which I know, you know, you're NHRA, they've moved what they call the cocoon for the driver. They've moved the driver's seat a little bit further to the center. They've added a lot more safety features. They've changed the cars. They've slowed them down on pit road. And I mean, there's just so much that NASCAR has done. I mean, you know, there's really not nothing that you can do for NHRA because, I mean, you know, just like you said, Tina, when you come to the line, when you green light, you gone. There's really nothing that they can do, you know, as far as doing safety barriers or head neck restraints. They don't. NHRA does not use a restrictor plate. And NASCAR uses a restrictor plate at Daytona International Speedway and here at Talladega Super Speedway. And I've heard a lot of fans say, why don't you take the restrictor plate off and just let them go? You can't do that because they're going to run 228, 230, and our airplane takes off a lot less than that. And, you know, we've had two or three incidents here. You know, back in the 80s, I was working for Mr. Enos Staley. With North Wilkesboro, bless his heart, he's passed away. I was working for him here when Bob Allison got up in the fence. Well, myself and Suzanne was here when Carl Edwards got up in the fence. I mean, you know, you can't, you know, everybody wants to see fast speed and nothing against. I don't want NASCAR to hold this against me, NASCAR, NHRA, Indy 500 or not. I mean, this is just my opinion strictly. Nothing toward the series. It's just my strictly opinion. Everybody wants to see wrecks, and I hate to say that, but they do. That's why everybody watches the race. But I mean, you know,
it's a threat of a wreck. Nobody wants to see anybody get hurt, but it's
right.
That being right there on the edge. I mean, that's why as drivers enjoy doing what we do because we know that and you know things don't always end up in a wreck. But I'll tell you that horrible feeling of oh my gosh, here it comes. Is there, whether or not there's an impact. But it's like that threat of that this could get crazy, of course that's what they want. It's you know, it's like watching a wipeout. If we were talking surfing, we'd be talking about guys wiping out. Nobody wants to see somebody hit the ground and break their neck, but they do want to see how far can these guys push their car.
The action, Tina. That's what you're saying. Yeah, and Tina, I hate to cut you and Tony short. We're coming up on 1 minute left in the show. Just a little over 1 minute. Tony,
you finish it off then. We'll see you next week. You just finish it off.
No, stay in here, Tina. I'm gonna let Tony do some stuff about his stuff and then let you do some stuff and then we'll end it. Tony, go ahead, bud.
Just very good. You know, look for the Indy cars in Iowa this weekend. And don't anybody forget the World of Outlaws, USAC National Sprint Car Series, Indiana Sprint Week. And, you know, let's keep an eye on Lewis Hamilton and Nico Rosberg just tearing up Formula One. And I want to say thanks again to Paul Cleveland and Brace Yourself and Miss Tina Stahl. Suzanne Despain, Tim Despain, and Stephen Wilson, and thanks for having me on, and I'll be back next week.
Thank you very much, Tony. Tina, you've got 10 seconds.
July 18th, 20th, Denver, that's where we'll be. That's the next NHRA race, and catch it on ESPN2.
10, folks. Thank y'all very much. Y'all have a great night.
Nice.
God bless you. Goodbye.